sleepyheads, welcome back to Miku's Crack House. This is episode 122. I'm your host, as always, Sam King. Join me is my best friend and co-host, Miles J. Miles, I'm cracking on saying my fucking name. I'm tired as fuck. You're tired as fuck. It's a tired, slow week, man.
Yeah, no, this is one of those weeks. So every time that we come together for these episodes, we'll usually, like, you know, say, you have content. Yeah, I got some content. Do you have content? Yeah, I got some content. Okay, you know, and we'll either kind of say, you know, I'm feeling this week, I'm feeling this can be a good show, and it never is. Or we'll be like, yeah, this is one of those bullshit weeks. We'll see what happens. And those are our best episodes. But I think we are generally on the page of, like, let's just get this one done.
let's hit 90 minutes and then let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, let's hit 90 minutes and then nap.
basically.
Yeah, so this will be a fun week for you. You're gonna suffer through 90 minutes of mid. And speaking of 90 minutes of mid, Sam.
Or did you watch the new Pixar movie or something?
I wish, dude. I fucking wish. Dude, I really want to see Elemental. That movie looks so lame. Oh my god. When I see a movie that lame at this, like, at this stage in my life, because before, like, I, you know, early, especially early in the podcast life, like, there was a period between, I don't know, episode 30, episode 60, like, especially when the Turning Red trailer came out, where I was like, man, Pixar, man, they're really, like, this really sucks, like, I really miss, and now I'm just like, oh my god, their new movie looks so lame, let's go! Like, when they announced Inside Out 2, I was hype, I was so hype.
The last, like, good one.
Yeah, well, Coco.
I didn't see Coco.
The
last good one I saw. How about
you,
that?
You'd probably see Coco and be like, yeah, that was okay. That was fine. You know.
I bet I would think Coco's probably pretty good.
Yeah, I think you would think it's a decent film. Like, probably a good, solid watch. Like, emotional, and it's got all the beats that movies usually have. And it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it doesn't suck.
It kind of reminded me of another...
You're talking about the Book of Life.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, everyone knows. Everyone knows Coco is just Book of Life for white people, which is fine. I have no problem with that because it's still a good film. Both of them are, but I mean, I don't know which one's gonna be better—the one made by white guys or the one made by the guy who made El Tigre. Like, what do you think, Sam?
What about the guy who made Mucha Lucha? Did he ever go on to do anything?
That guy was Jewish, Sam. He went on to be a Weinstein brother.
Oh.
I don't even know what that means.
He went on to make Fish Hooks, and then
did he make Fish Hooks?
Cast nothing but horrible. Isn't it the meme with Fish Hooks is that nothing but, like, all the main cast of Fish Hooks are all arrested?
Was Corey in the house? Was he arrested? Because he was in Fish Hooks too.
Yeah, he got arrested for, like, dealing with some underage ladies, I think.
Okay, because I was about to say, I know Orlando Brown was arrested for, like, drug possession.
I'm looking this up. Kyle Massey arrest. He was issued an arrest in July of 2021 for a missed court date, $100,000 warrant, charged with one count of immoral communication with a minor in June. He stands accused of sending the dick pics to a 13-year-old girl. His court date was initially in King County, but it was pushed to the morning.
King County is where fucking Douglas Spink was tried.
No way.
Yeah,
dude.
I remember this in King County, Washington.
Yeah, no, that's,
bruh,
that's
all
the
sex
be.
Pests out of King County, boy.
Dude, what do you think it is about King County, Washington that breeds such degeneracy?
I think it's just boredom. They're just, like, you know how they say rich people get really, like, kinky because they've tried everything. They've been to islands. They've had they've had, like, all the caviar dishes. They've been in nice restaurants. They got nothing better to do than to throw orgies and just get weirder and weirder and weirder. Like, I think King County people are just so bored that they're like, yeah, that horse is looking real good right now. But even the girl from Fish Hooks?
Yeah, I think she got arrested for I think she was like belligerently drunk or whatever and got arrested.
Oh, like public indecency. You're like,
so I think that was what it
drunken
was.
Misconduct.
I remember her arrest was like two or three tiers below the other two.
It's for the meme. It's for the meme, but she's definitely the most she's the cleanest hooker.
Dude, what the fuck was that show? Has like no legacy that whenever I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, I that it did exist.
That's one of those shows that I watched, and it was like, I would describe it as both surprisingly good and excessively lame. I feel this way about like a lot of the, like Edgar and Ellen, I feel that way about that show.
Yeah, and Miles,
Making Fiends.
Yeah, Miles, I'm gonna ask like a really like stupid question, but let me elaborate. So you, like, kind of understand where I'm coming from. Because what I'm about to say does exist, but I'm, like,
okay.
I'm talking, like, in the last, like, 10 years.
Okay.
Why, like, no one has tried to, like, I can't believe no one's nailed, like, another show like SpongeBob since it came out in, like, the late 90s. Because I was thinking to myself, like, about how, like, SpongeBob is this great cast of characters, a really, really fantastic setting with, like, a ton of iconic, funny, like, C and D tier characters that are only in, like, one or a handful of episodes, but are still memorable and an important
like
part
Bubble
of the
Bass
whole.
The Tattletale Bass. Strangler.
Exactly, or the newsfish, or the or the My Leg guy, or the chocolate woman, or the pizza dude, or the
both the chocolate
guy.
People, the chocolate guy. Where's my drink?
Yeah, exactly. Like all these, like really, really great characters. Flying Dutchman, Larry the Lobster. Again, the more like C tier.
Yeah, Larry
characters.
The Lobster is very C tier.
And I can't believe that's, like, never been nailed before, where it's, like, it's a more sort of, like, it's... Because, well, I mean, how would you describe, like, the like, that SpongeBob?
Like, the it factor like, of it? Because I have an answer for this, I think.
Yeah,
I have an answer. So I think it's twofold. I think it's the fact that SpongeBob stars adults, which is so rare. Because a lot of kids shows, you know, the cast or like the network, the network executives making these shows, they usually want to make a show about kids or teens, right? But then the other thing is usually that the senses of humor of a lot of the people making these shows are like the senses of adventure of a lot of the people making these shows is usually either like too creative, like too like out there. Or it's, like, too mundane and generic. Like, because there's a lot of really creative episodes of SpongeBob, right? And I was thinking, I think the closest equivalent is Regular Show. I think Regular Show is the closest equivalent. But Regular Show also has this sort of dude bro slacker 20s energy to it, and especially to a lot of its adventures and a lot of its plots. Whereas SpongeBob is, like, classic Seinfeldian, like, social errors and like people getting into like obsessions or weird things
that
last the whole episode. Because I really would describe it as Seinfeldian.
Because specifically the first episode that came to my mind is when SpongeBob and Patrick go visit Sandy for the first time and they refuse to ask for
water. Yeah. And which is such a like that's such a like a George Costanza Jerry Seinfeld plot point.
Like you're
where,
so right, dude.
Yeah, like and so there is something. I think it's just the fact that it's a show about adults who are like navigating these sorts of like social or workplace kinds of elements. And then a lot of these other shows, like these kids shows, have those elements, but they're so localized to either kids or teens that they can't have the same, and especially like kids or teens in a normal environment or in like a relatively mundane environment. Because the thing about kids shows that people like don't understand is that kids are genuinely more fascinated by, cause you always have people who are like, man, why don't they make more stuff like The Incredibles? Why don't they make more stuff like Avatar The Last Airbender? You know, I'm always banging on my drum about, you know, Ocarina of Time. Why don't they make more games like that? There's gotta be other ones of these. Cause a friend of mine said something really great, which was what he was like, bro, I'm fucking tired of people being like, man, we got to talk about Majora's Mask. Why don't we talk about Sonic Adventure 2? And I love that he said this. I love that he said this because what he was saying was right. Sonic Adventure 2 is 10 times more appealing to a kid. Like, and so you have all these people making their video essays, you know, about like, oh, this game was too brilliant and I didn't figure it out as a kid. Where it's like, what kids want is Sonic Adventure 2. And it doesn't matter that as an adult you think Sonic Adventure 2 is laughable. You're not the target audience. And that's like what most kids' media is. And I know everyone wants these things that they can experience as children and then grow up with. They want Harry Potter. You know, everyone loves Harry Potter. Everyone loves Star Wars. Like, but those things can only happen like once or twice in a generation, because then people will try and they'll fundamentally get wrong the appeal of it, right?
Yeah.
And so like when he's whenever he's talking about like all these pretentious video essays who are like, yeah, Sonic had a rough translation into 3D, you know, Sonic Adventure 2 story stupid, and then they turn around and they blow smoke up the ass of some like D tier game, like or like they do their hour long video essay about, you know, game that everyone already talks about, that everyone already agrees is great. Like I feel this way with like Metal Gear Solid 2, Silent Hill 2. Like, just there are certain things that are like a moment in time or a particular like moment of brilliance, and especially that we have a lot of time away from, right? That people can kind of gas up and say that they're geniuses for identifying shit that everyone already knows is very good, right? And then a lot of this stuff that was great in its era, like people will kind of dunk on or say that it's not as good. And I think that this is something that people don't understand. Like, kids' media is being made for the crowd of people who are kids right now and will enjoy it right now. Like, there are so few kids' shows that are picked up specifically because, oh, kids and adults will like it. That's, like, really not the priority of the network. Because you know who doesn't buy merch? Adults. You know who doesn't, like, beg their parents to buy them merch? Like, specifically toys? Because you can make a fucking toy for cheap, right? Like,
yeah.
Or you can make like a huge fad out of toys. Like, adults will buy a sticker. They'll buy a shirt, right?
Well, you know, now that's starting to become not necessarily the case, because the toy market now is all adults because it's collectors.
And to be fair,
and also the prices are
that.
So inflated that it's like it's $20 for a fucking Mario toy at I was gonna say Toys R Us, RIP, like Target, yeah, or something in the toy aisle.
Yeah, but like. But those are a very different kind of toy, especially. And here's the thing. A lot of the information I'm operating on is 2 or 3 years old. I don't know if this is still the case, but, like, 2 to 3 years old is very different than these nostalgic morons who are waxing poetically about the one show that was good in 2002, right? Like, and so he was talking about, like everyone's always gassing up these old properties that, like, are obviously brilliant as an adult, but no one can just be like, let's talk about why Sonic Adventure 2 is good as a kid's story for kids back in the day. No one can have that perspective anymore. And so writers don't have that. Writers don't have that perspective, and critics don't have that perspective. Like, I mean the writers who are writing, like, anyone who's like, yeah, my thing's like the next Avatar. No, it's fucking not. But the people who have that attitude are network execs who know what kids want and who knows what's appealing. And the people who actually get their shows sold because they made them to appeal to network execs and for kids. And SpongeBob is such an anomaly, I think, because it was the perfect storm of made for kids with a great cast, great whatever. But it also captured a very interesting and specific appeal to kids, which is that kids are also very fascinated by adult stuff and the adult world. But SpongeBob manages to make that world very fun. Like, so SpongeBob isn't working in an office. He's a fry cook at a restaurant. Like, and kids go to restaurants. They understand, like, what's fun about, like, a restaurant flipping Krabby Patties. And they understand, like, okay, you know, popular spot. I get that. Grouchy cashier and the upbeat fry cook. And like, it's easy to understand, like, a cheap bastard like Mr. Krabs. There's a lot of stuff as well about that show that, like, doesn't register as clever or creative, like, especially Sandy stuff. Everything to do with Sandy is very, like, clever. But that's a show that kind of devolved from that Seinfeldian, like, comedy of errors. I think around the time of the movie, where that movie is, like, a pure fantasy story. And then afterwards, like, it becomes just classic kids show anecdotes. And I think that's just the voice of the writers who are at, you know, who are with SpongeBob. And so I think a problem is just it's just that a lot of people have not been able to find like that cast of characters that is appealing as a fictional world, starring adults, and in particular has a voice, the voice of these sorts of Seinfeldian people. And so a lot of what's coming on kids shows is what sells, which is like, you know, middle school, high school shows aimed at younger kids who are fascinated by that world, because of course they don't care about elementary school, they've already been there. And like these, the kinds of like social dramas that get, that happen to them. Like these kids aren't having crushes, but they're fascinated by these stories about, you know, people crushing on their high school crush and trying to get their attention. Like that sort of thing is interesting to young kids. And so, I mean, it's just like this perfect storm of like three or four different like comedic voices that are rare for networks to find appealing and interesting for kids. And I really do think it also just comes down to the fact that Nickelodeon in the 90s, their programming and their idea of programming was very different than like Cartoon Network and Disney Channel. Disney Afternoons, I should say. Disney Afternoons was very adventure focused, right? It was very like adventure show focused, because you had Tailspin and DuckTales and like the like Hercules and Aladdin shows. Chippendale Rescue Rangers, like their shows were like 11-minute adventures.
Yeah, and Gargoyles is the only thing that is a little
and Darkwing Duck, like to
oh
an
yeah,
extent.
Darkwing.
That's a little like that's basically a Batman parody, but like kind of straight up Batman. But then other than like Batman the Animated Series, like most of Cartoon Network's, because I think that aired on that must have aired on WB. Batman the Animated Series, but
Batman the Animated Series was WB and Cartoon Network. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was a joint thing. Yeah. But like a lot of Cartoon Network, like, you know, because even if you factor in like Powerpuff Girls, a lot of that was like straight up kids comedy, you know, loud, very energetic. But like Nickelodeon was like surrealism. That was kind of their vibe. Like they were going for like weird stuff. Like they had Pete and Pete,
Rocko's Modern Life.
Rocko's Modern Life, Ren and Stimpy. And so SpongeBob kind of fits in perfectly with that sort of surrealist era of Nickelodeon. It has this like Seinfeldian voice, but it has a cast that appeals to kids. And it's also got plots that appeal to kids. Like for like a workplace comedy or like a social comedy, it has a lot of these plots that are generally like appealing to kids because of how heightened they are. And I think those are just like five or six different comedic voices that you have to marry. And most people don't know how to do it. Like, again, I think, you know, not everyone can write an innovation era Pixar movie, which is why they're writing Elemental instead. Not everyone can write, you know, like a great like JRPG story. So they're writing something a little bit more like a Tales game, right? Like something a little bit more schematic. Sonic Adventure 2 with like, and especially all the Sonic games, like, because I've talked a lot about, and I'm not the only one, because you have people like what Ian Fleming, who wrote Frontiers.
Yeah,
Ian Fleming wrote James Bond. Sorry, Ian Flynn. Sorry, Ian Fleming wrote a Sonic game.
Dude, I mean, that Sonic game would probably be awesome.
Oh, I would love like Sonic game written by Ian Fleming. But yeah, like Ian Flynn, like clearly there's a lot of material for Sonic games that you can write us. And the comics have been doing this. But like the era of Sonic that I think a lot of people are very fond of from their childhoods, like a lot of that was very melodramatic and very...
Totally, dude.
Yeah.
That's why it's fun. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, and people make fun of Sonic 06, I think partially because Sonic 06, unfortunately, is a bad game. Well, sometimes. We'll talk about that in a second. But also, like, because I think they were old enough to realize the melodrama didn't work for them anymore. And the presentation doesn't help. I like, that game having, like, no music during its cutscenes.
That game, I think the story of that game is just fucking ass. Where, like, I actually think, because both 06 and, like, Adventure 2 have, like, a myriad of, like, wacky, pretty bad story plot holes, where if you think about it for, like, 2 seconds, it's like, wait a minute. But Adventure 2 sells all the emotional beats that it like doesn't really matter.
Exactly. Like and that's what's appealing to kids, is that like, is that you just get the emotional beats out and you make sure that they feel something. Because like as a kid, I was super about Shadow the Hedgehog. Like I thought that game was badass. And
yeah. Dude, come on, that final cutscene when they're all like kind of just on the arc and the credits are playing and they're just kind of like talking to each other and they're like reminiscent about Shadow and everything. I'm like, dude, this is so good.
And yeah, like, and it totally nails it. It totally nails it.
Yeah, this is fucking awesome. Like,
and I think it does handle it better. Because, like, people always talk about how emotional they get over, like, Gamma's story in Sonic Adventure 1. Like, and you can laugh about that because it's silly. Like, but they totally go for it. And they really swing for that fence.
Dude,
and
the Gamma's story is unironically fucking incredible. Like, that's the best part about it is that it is fucking so good.
And like, you have people who are going to make fun of that, but, like, guess what? They're swinging for it. You'll never have that level of confidence.
All I'm saying is the people who are laughing at that have not played Sonic Adventure 1 Gamma Story, if they're saying that shit.
Well,
come
I've
on.
Always said...
When fucking E1... When you are playing early in the campaign and E102 walks in on E101 Beta getting, like, fucking operated on, becoming the Mark II, and he walks out and he just goes, "This must be the wrong room." Fucking awesome. Fucking one of the best fucking scenes ever. The final boss fight's so fucking sick. He fucking kills himself at the end so he can free the
bird,
the animal,
him.
Yeah. And himself, the Flicky. God, that's so good, dude. That's such a good fucking game.
I remember saying once, I said, "You will never have the unearned confidence of Kingdom Hearts." And I meant that as like a jab at people who are like self-loathing idiots. And I just got like... This was when I had Twitter in, like, 2020, 2019. And I just got, like, attacked by people who are like, "Yeah, no one should." And it's like, die, dude. Just fucking die. Like I'm sorry that something believes in itself and you don't. What do you want me to say to you?
But, yeah, Miles, have you been playing Project 06?
No, but I wanted to talk about this because you brought up Project 06, and I'd like you to intro it. Yeah.
Yeah, so basically Project 06 is primarily a Sonic fan game made by one guy. I think his name's like Chaos X 2006, I think is the name. And he's a guy up until a year ago has never played 06 for himself, but saw the game online and thought it was interesting. But saw a lot of people complain about it, so he decided to take, you know, what people said about the game and just kind of make it from the ground up native on PC. And we're finally at a point where all the Sonic stages, the Shadow stages, the Silver levels, all the Amigo characters, everyone's playable. So all we're waiting on is, like, the bosses, and then I think the overworld hub, and then, like, the story cutscenes in between, and then you can really get the full fucking package.
Which, well, to be fair, that's still a lot, but also a lot of progress has already been made.
And to the point now where, like, I feel like the game is in a state where you can meaningfully have a good time playing through just all, like, the levels 1 through 10 and all the campaigns. And I primarily spent my time playing through Sonic's campaign. I played through all the levels, and yeah, dude, it's fucking awesome. It is fucking awesome. Every issue that 06 has is basically fixed, plus a bunch of new elements to make it even just a better, more interesting, better looking, better playing, better feeling video game and Sonic game. And it really is it's a game that is rewriting fucking history right now for Sonic fans, because I gotta be honest, Miles, when you play this fucking game, you realize that the level design of 06, mostly unchanged in this remake, is fucking really good Sonic level design that has a lot of open-ended multi-pathways that are really interesting, that lead to different goodies and potential for points. And also, Chaos X reworked the entire scoring system. So the levels are meant to be played with, like, score in mind, in a sense. So you can play them and beat the and take out groups of enemies in such a way to maximize your score. And there's certain ways you can do the combat and play to do that. And I think it's a really fucking sick game. I think it's really sick. And of course, it's on PC. It's a fucking fan game. It's free. And yeah, I was like stunned with like how much I liked it and was really, really into it. And then Sonic is really fun. Silver is the most changed character. Silver's like run speed is like four times as fast. He fucking whips around. He has way better control over his psychic kinesis abilities. You don't have to mash the A button to have him fucking spam around in the air to get anywhere. And he just fucking fucking dashes at like a nice good airspeed. And Shadow the Hedgehog has more added combo game stuff to his kit. And the other characters are all play great. You know, Knuckles and Rouge aren't getting stuck on the fucking walls, and Tails doesn't just throw dummy ring bombs. He can swing his tails around too. It's fucking good. And all the Sonic fans agree that this shit is good, and maybe like one of the best 3D Sonic games, honestly. Because I think this game has done for a lot of Sonic fans what people have really wanted for a while, which is like a return to the more adventurous style of gameplay, where the camera is like a little back and above Sonic's head at a good distance, and there's no boost button, and it's more about exploring a level in a 3D space and less about like getting to the goal as fast as humanly possible in the most optimal route, like Unleashed and Generations are like. And Sonic 06 always like had that gameplay, just like nowhere near as good or as fun or as elegant as SA1 and SA2. And now that that's kind of been addressed, we kind of do have that like third sort of semi Sonic Adventure 3 now. That's actually like not too bad and pretty fun. I think you should check it out, Miles, and give it a shot, especially since, you know, you have a long history with that game.
Yeah. And like to be perfectly honest with you, well, not just you, but the world, because like this isn't just like this goes out to the world right now. I think that Sonic 06 is overhated to a certain degree, because it's like legendarily bad status is it's got a similar energy to like Plan 9 from Outer Space, where it's probably the most playable bad game, I think.
Easily.
And so I think, like, people who are like, yeah, it's one of the worst games of all time, I think it's one of the most playable bad games of all time. Like, truly, like, worst games of all time, like, those belong to, like, Big Rigs Over the Road Racing, like, a lot of these things that do have this legendary status for being, like, truly, truly heinous. What's it, Hunt Down the Freeman that everyone always talks about? But 06 is relatively playable. And there's also like a couple of different instances in which that game is kind of is particularly like amusing. And again, as you said, like on occasion there are good levels or good scenarios. Like I know people like Crisis City a lot, like in all its instances. Shadow is generally deemed like the best character, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think Sonic in the vanilla game is a bit better because the busted gem powers are awesome.
Yeah, and it's stuff like that makes that like a game that's bad and famously terrible that you can also experience end to end and get the full spectrum of. Whereas like most of these like truly terrible games that everyone always rags on, like you're never going to see the end of it. You're never going to see the credits.
No, because they're so fucked. Like
yeah, they're so bad. Like, I feel this way about, like, you remember Spyro, Year of the Dragon?
Yeah. I never played it, but I know the game.
No, sorry, Enter the Dragonfly, because Year of the Dragon is the fourth one. Yeah, the fourth one, right? Enter the Dragonfly. And, like, I played that as a kid, and, like, I kind of understood that it was, like, worse, but I didn't realize how much worse it was. And, like, so for me, that's an example of, like, a playable bad game, right? But people always talk about it like it's this like cataclysmic failure because you can glitch yourself into the final boss and people are like, now that, you know, that's proof that it's truly terrible. It's like, no, proof that it's truly terrible is like in Over the Big Rigs where you could just get out of the map and then come back. Right? Like that's
in Big Rigs where you hold the reverse and can go infinite speed because there's no speed cap when you reverse the truck.
Yeah, stuff like that. And I remember seeing this thread where someone was like, I miss when games came out and they were like truly like legendarily abysmal, because now you have people who are like, yeah, you know, Pokemon Sword and Shield is the worst game ever. And it's like, oh, that game's a piece of shit, but Come on. Come on. Have some optics
it's,
here.
It's one of these things where it's like...
Or perspective.
The bad games in the 2010s and the 2020s are just different kinds of bad games. Yeah. Like, the industry's moved on to where there's a new level of unacceptability. You know, in the NES and Super Nintendo era, the fucking bar for fucking quality was much lower than now, where like you have to reach a much higher bar of quality with your fucking game release on a base level, on this like basic fucking level, in order to even be seen. Like, that's why, like, when Redfall came out a few months ago, I was like super fascinated by it, because I was like, oh, this is your daddy's kind of bad game. Where like, this is bad on a, like, it's like the open world is fucked. Like, you could walk for 4 minutes and not encounter a single enemy, or like encounter, or just in like, it doesn't feel like there was any thought or reason.
That's a classic sixth generation bad game.
Yeah, like a sixth gen bad game. Yeah, like our generation type of bad game, or like a really shit license game that's like 4 hours.
Iron Man 2, like one of those where that's just, those games don't come out anymore. And for me, like, I'm sorry, Pokemon Sword and Shield, that could be as bad as it is now, and it will never even crack like top 100 worst games. Like, you're still allowed to hate it, by the way. You're still allowed to not like it.
There's too many bad games. There's so many bad games, dude. I gotta be honest. The top 100 worst games of all time, I would honestly say probably 98 to 99 of those games are games nobody fucking knows. Yeah. Like, games you and I, we don't even fucking know.
That we've never played.
They're in the drudges of Steam, or they're on fucking itch. Like, you know, I can only imagine, like, of the 816 NES games or whatever the number is. I might be a little off there. Like, I can only imagine maybe, like, two or three of those games at most can crack the top 100 worst games of all time.
Yeah, but infamy tends to be more important than quality. And...
Or lack thereof in this case.
Well, so I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, my personal theory about, like, what makes a video game, like, what makes a great game. But ironically enough, this actually dovetails better into a segment that I was excited to talk about. So I'm just going to not even say my piece. It's probably going to involve Zelda at some point. So fucking who cares?
Thank God.
Yeah, no, that's a joke, by the way. It had nothing to do with Zelda. But, oh, God, what was it? Yes. So we were talking yesterday about Fall Guy media.
Yeah.
And like, in particular, like, how infamy happens to certain, like, products. And the end result is, like, a forever change in people's, like, expectations, or in the landscape, or in the way that something is talked about.
Exactly. And specifically, my like, example to, like, what a Fall Guy piece of media is that, like, you what really solidifies it is when the company with the power, the creative or financial backing power behind the company or the product in question, when they are shitting on it or being like, yeah, that sucked or that was not good, or plus like or like big dumb big super fans of stuff, when they do that shit too, like, that's when you know it's a good piece of Fall Guy media. And I think Sonic 06 is a good piece of Fall Guy media, for sure. Because I feel like everyone always points to that game when talking about, like, the quality or lack thereof of modern Sonic games. Because, like, especially, you know, now, because this is something too, like, with gaming, and we'll get back to the Fall Guys coming, but want to just say this, but, like, games are particularly interesting because, like, as, like, remakes and remasters and stuff happen, and as new people play those games, people's interpretations of certain games in media is going to be different as time goes on. And I'm telling you, in, like, 15, 20 years, most people introduction to Sonic 06 is going to be this fucking PO6 game. It's not going to be on backwards compatible fucking 360, which I don't think it is. Or or a PS3. Like, no one's gonna go out of their way to play that shit, especially when this is already way better and you can play it on your computer for free. Where most true Sonic fans are nowadays are on PC. So it's like, in 2033, it's like Sonic 06 is gonna be remembered way better than fucking Forces or Lost World, probably.
Oh yeah, for sure. It probably already is. Like, if nothing else.
Despite it being like a Fall Guy media. And another piece of media I said to Miles is like an example. Like, I feel like Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is a big piece of Fall Guy media. The prequels were Fall Guy media in the lead up to Force Awakens, but the fact that trilogy is so ass and universally just panned and disliked, it has caused people to go back to the prequels and view them in a different light with a new perspective. And I feel like the prequels are seen and respected much more now than they were 15 to 20 years ago.
That's actually something I want to talk about, because it does, and it's good because it also ties into what we were talking about with like Sonic Adventure 2 and SpongeBob, like the idea of like what kids want. Because a lot of people, the criticism against fucking the prequels was like, oh, kids don't want to see these movies, you know, kids want like adults in heroic roles, which I think that's kind of true. That's pretty true. Like, no one cares if Anakin's a child, but ultimately those movies probably are more appealing to the core audience of people who like Star Wars than these sequel movies are.
I have a good buddy of mine who's a big like Star Wars guy and knows a lot about the intricacies and the mechanics of the universe and the more deeper lore shit. And I was asking him like what he likes about the prequels, and he's like I just like all of the I just love all of the lore and what it adds to the universe. He's like, I feel like this era of the universe is so rich with really great like storytelling stuff that you can see woven in throughout the sort of main narrative of Phantom Menace, especially Attack of the Clones, he told me, and Revenge of the Sith. Because he's like, yeah, Attack of the Clones is my fucking favorite, which I'm like, that's fucking crap, dude.
That's a rare take.
But it's like, it to him, it's he's like, I really could give a fuck about it. It's not about like the greater, grander narrative of the story. It's about the elements it brought into the universe that like makes it interesting to him. And I like kind of appreciate, and with some reflection, I'm like, oh, I can kind of appreciate that. Cause the Clone Wars is a very interesting part of the Star Wars universe that I think is neat. And I loved both the Genndy Tartakovsky shorts in the second season Full Run show, plus the CG show growing up. And like that's definitely like a cool, interesting, way more political era of Star Wars than like the original trilogy, which is much more science fantasy.
And it is very funny because like people are like, yeah, no one cares about politics. Kids don't care about the politics of these movies. But like, there is something about the prequels, ultimately, that puts them in a place where they're easier to appreciate with some amount of hindsight and with some amount of analysis.
Yeah. Like, and also, I'll just say this. I just think Revenge of the Sith is a good movie.
Yeah. I think it's a good movie. Like, I think it's...
I will just say up front, I think Revenge of the Sith is fucking awesome. The other two, I don't really like that much. I like Phantom Menace, I think, a little more than Attack of the Clones. I found Attack of the Clones really boring last time I rewatched it, but not that into Phantom Menace.
There's some funny stuff in Attack of the Clones that, like, is amusing to me. I think Attack of the Clones is the more interesting failure if we're talking about, like, the negative films of the trilogy. Phantom Menace, I don't hate anything about Phantom Menace per se. I just think it's kind of not good. And it's not good in a very generic, like, oh, the quality isn't here kind of way. Like, I know everyone always makes fun of, like, I'll try spinning. That's a good trick. Like, a lot of the lines and a lot of, like, the dialogue. But there's something that I really like, which is Dave Filoni, who made the Clone Wars, and he's kind of like the showrunner now of a lot of the, or, like, at the very least, like, a creative consultant of a lot of the newer, like, Disney Star Wars shows that everyone really liked for 5 seconds.
Before they forget that it existed, and then they move on to the next show.
Yes, and then consume next product. He did, like, an analysis of, like, the final battle between Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn, like, on, like, a podcast. Like, he just kind of...
Wait, are you talking about, are you talking about the scene in Rebels where Obi-Wan fights Maul in Rebels?
No, I said Qui-Gon.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
The finale from Phantom Menace. Oh, okay. Where he says he's like talking about like the meaning of the song Duel of the Fates, and like in particular like how Qui-Gon and Anakin's like characters, like basically he says like the tragedy of the films is that like if Qui-Gon dies, Anakin won't succeed because he can feel that Anakin has, you know, a high midichlorian count, and he has the power to like disturb the force and all these things. So if he dies, and he kind of knows, like, Obi-Wan is a very interesting character in that film, according to Dave Filoni, because Obi-Wan is a very dismissive person, and he's like kind of, he's young and he's intelligent, but he's also kind of like, you know, he's very dismissive and he's very flippant, and he like kind of doesn't see the potential in people. And so a big part of it, like, he keeps saying, like, all the, you know, he brings up some line where he's like, you know, there's nothing but, like, useless stuff on the planet of, like, Tatooine, where he's, like, not looking at, like, the potential that a person like Anakin has or that some of the ship parts have. Like, I don't remember the exact definition, but basically he realized that Anakin needs the mentorship of a man like Qui-Gon and not a man like Obi-Wan. And so, like, the big tragedy is, like, when Qui-Gon dies, like, he kind of realizes, like, Obi-Wan has no shot of raising this kid right and making him, you know, into the Jedi that will follow the path of the Jedi properly. And it's one of these things where it's like, at least you can get that out of the movie.
Yeah, and there's a similar, like, in there's a similar thing, because it's the voice of, I think it was the voice of Darth Maul in the cartoon of Rebels. There's a sort of final showdown between old man Obi-Wan and Darth Maul again on the deserts of Tatooine, and they have a very short duel, and it starts by Obi-Wan going into his classic, his like old school stance where he's kind of got the sword and then he's got his arm up, and then he's kind of looking at Maul, and then he sort of changes his stance to the stance from four, the kendo stance, and then he changes it one more time to Qui-Gon's stance. Yeah. To trick Maul into doing the same thing that he did to kill Qui-Gon. So Maul's just like, Maul sees Qui-Gon's stand. He's like, oh, I'll just hit him like I did that guy. And fucking, but, you know, Ben Kenobi's fucking badass. And just completely fucking calls his swing and just knocks him out in fucking three hits. And the fight's over and he fucking kills Maul. It's like fucking sick as shit.
Yeah, and like that's the kind of story content,
like, that's a great little story just told in like 20 seconds worth of animation that you could only really understand if you know the story of the films deeply, if you know the stances of the characters, like,
yeah. No, I can't believe that Ben Kenobi is a stance character, dude. He's a fighting game stance character,
dude. That's why he was so controversial to play as in Soul Calibur 4. Just kidding. That was Vader and
it was
Yoda.
Vader and Yoda. And Star.
That's
Killer.
Why they wouldn't let him in, because he's a stance character. It was,
yeah,
he would have been too
character.
Hard.
That's, well, Valdo's a stance character, and he's in the game. So I don't know what to tell you, but I think the thing about the prequels that I can say is, at the very least, those are art. Like, those are someone's art. It is the vision of George Lucas trying to tell a story about fascism. And trying to tell a story about, like, the fate of, like, a young, impressionable person, you know, falling to fear and propaganda. Like, and also this sort of, like, Lucifer, Paradise Lost style. Like, that is very classical attempts at art with, like, these allusions to ancient myth and well, not ancient myth. That's it's not that old, but yeah, epic poetry, as well as like world history. Like there's a video of him kind of explaining like how fascism happens, and he's in a room with like Kathleen Kennedy, and Kathleen Kennedy like completely misunderstands what he's trying to say, which is really funny. And like regardless of how that film turned out, like I can't hate that movie. Like I feel the same way about like first as much as like dunk on like Metal Gear Solid 4. Like I can't hate it, cuz that's someone's art. Like, and it means something to someone. I still think it's a very cynical like fine, I'll make the game kind of game, but like if nothing else, when he found out, like when Kojima found out, like, yeah, the staff won't work on the dark ending I have in mind, I'll make the most emotional, like, good possible ending I can. And like, it gets me. Like, I think the rest of the game sucks and it gets me. Like, it's one of those examples of like, you will never be able to say that about these sequel movies.
No, it's just as like, yeah, I just feel they're just so cynical.
There's
it's
no
just,
art. It's like, it's literally just about trying to make people think they're watching the old films. And there's no new story there. And like every attempt at a new story is stupid. And it's because I used to think it was just a case of like, oh, Rian Johnson's a very talented filmmaker. The script just wasn't very good. No, I think that Rian Johnson's just not a very good teller of bigger stories. The more characters Rian Johnson has to keep track of, the worse his films get. I like Glass Onion is like a top five, like most infuriating movie I've ever seen in my entire life. I think that movie is a pile of shit. It's so bad. It's like they said, what if the menu was stupid? And that was the movie they made. Because you know what the problem is? It's so mired in like today politics. Like it's about Elon Musk basically, and it's just like, what are you doing, man? Make like a real movie that people might actually remember in 4 years. Like,
exactly, right? Because that's the problem you get when you make stuff that's like super topical and of the moment, and it's not a fucking YouTube video, like or even a fucking song or something. Like the movies and fucking TV take fucking forever. They gotta be cooking forever. And then it comes out and it's just like, this is not gonna be something that like, that's the thing, Miles. I don't feel like anybody makes stuff with the intent for it to stick around, really. You know?
No.
Like meaningfully stick around. Like as a good piece of culture.
And you know what? Like, as someone who is working like on a lot of different things, and especially like doing some of the editing work that I've done, yeah, I mean, a lot of people who have these jobs, like I'm very much like of the mindset like, oh, a ton of people are going to see this, it's going to live on the internet for a long time. And meanwhile, a lot of them are like, they're like, it's going to get its views and then everyone's going to move on. And like for me, I never think like that. Like videos always get second or third or fourth lives if they're topical and if the topic is good.
But even less than that, like,
but for movies and TV, that has no excuse.
Exactly. And what I was gonna say about like YouTube videos is like more or less than like, oh, videos getting second, third, fourth wins. It's like, no, big videos get watched by thousands of people every day. Like, you know, every day a video, like a viral video, might get like 100 views a day or whatever. If it's like a good video that has some evergreen-ish elements to it. Like it'll still like find a way to like eke in some views as it gets recommended to more and more people on the platform. So people are still going to continue to see it years after it's out. So it's like, that's why I care about, you know, a video's quality, and why I want it to be like good, and why I don't just want to like necessarily like shit something out. But I just feel like. The problem is just like it really is streaming, Miles. Like it really is the streaming services. That's what the problem is. Is because it all comes down to they need like a quantity of content, because they need something that'll appeal to you, so you keep your subscription. Like let me give you an example. Like Netflix is doing a fucking Scott Pilgrim, like the animated.
Yeah.
Dude, it looks fucking awesome. It looks so fucking good. I'm super excited for it. I love the original book. I love the movie. This is going to be a... It looks fantastic. I'm so excited. Like, they got my fucking Netflix sub until November. Like, you know, they got me at
JoJo,
least till then.
They did that for me. Like, I stuck with Netflix for JoJo. And to be fair, they have a great anime selection, I think. Like any anime that people are still talking about is on Netflix.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, any anime of the now, like, truly of the now, is probably not on Netflix. Like, you can't watch Chainsaw Man there. But give it, I don't know, give it, like, a year. And yeah. it'll probably be on Netflix.
It's got the, Netflix is better, like, it is come for the more good legacy style shows.
Yeah,
like, your Cowboy Bebop, your FMA.
Yeah, Full Metal Alchemist, One Piece, Soul Eater.
Yeah, the good, yeah, the good shit. Yeah, the 2000s, 2010s Kino anime.
Yeah, all the great, all the shit that everyone still talks about. And then, even then, there's a couple of, like, newer ones. I bumped my hand on the desk. Sorry about that for everyone who saw my camera shake. Yeah, I mean, like, obviously you have a couple of originals, like Little Witch Academia, which are Netflix exclusives. You have a couple Netflix exclusives that are pretty, like, stellar.
Yeah.
Obviously, Part 6. I don't know. I think it's a very interesting model, and I'm not a big fan of what Netflix is up to, but, like, it does help. It does help them to, like, stay relevant, to just keep making stuff and to just buy everything, even though it's, like, the worst model of all time, and it's proven to not work now that we see the numbers and the spectator market's done and it's failing clearly. But guess what? They fucking still have content for the next 5 years that's just sitting on a shelf somewhere.
Yeah, like, that's the thing, is it's just, like, I really do genuinely feel, and this is my personal opinion, but I feel like 2023 really is, like, a tipping point for, like, the contemporary, like, movie, TV, media landscape, because it's, like, I feel like we're finally, like, this year is the breaking point where, like...
No one is watching any of it. No one is going out to the theaters to see any of it. Like, that's the big thing, because... I had, like, a brief conversation, because Nintendo, it was revealed that they patented a lot of Tears of the Kingdom's mechanics. You know, that sucks. Like, it's...
Yeah, I always hate that shit.
Yeah, I don't like it. Well, it was funny, I went on a deep dive of companies that have patented their mechanics. Like, did you know that Sega patented the Crazy Taxi Arrow?
Of course, yeah, dude, yeah. That's actually a super relevant, important court... Like, that's a big court case, because that's with Simpsons Road Rage.
Simpsons Road Rage, yeah. And it's such an interesting, like I didn't realize, like, how many things had been patented by certain game companies.
Yeah.
The Nemesis system.
The Namco loading screen was... Yeah. Yeah, the Nemesis system was probably, I think, the biggest patent of the last...
Well, it's the biggest patent because it's such an intricate system that probably should be, accessible to people. And it's a shame. I especially feel this way with Ascend. I would love it if Ascend was not patented, because that's such a great, like, system that saves a lot of people
time.
Well,
you can't copyright an idea. You can't patent an idea.
You
can
only
patent
the system itself,
yeah,
and how it's done. So, like,
exactly.
People can still do Ultra Hand. They just can't do Ultra Hand the way that Zelda has done it. And so, for me, like, I'm kind of the opinion that, like, this patent, people are, like, all patents of game mechanics are super, like, over... People always overblow, like, what that means. The one that's really big is the vehicle. They have patented the way that Link basically becomes one with his vehicle when you drive it, so that Link is no longer affected by physics and only the vehicle is. Like, that's kind of a big deal. That's a big patent. Because it's a very common Unity trick. It's a very common trick made in, like, used for, like, Unity.
I was gonna say, you can't, like... Doesn't that work? Doesn't fucking Grand Theft Auto 3 work like this?
But here's,
like,
the thing:
you
Grand
get in
Theft
the car
Auto,
and then you're the car. Like,
I think it's a case of like when you have a character who normally is affected by physics, and then you have the vehicle, like, basically, like, take over. I didn't quite explain.
That's
the
not
form
gonna
of it.
Hold up. That's not gonna hold up in a fucking court of law.
It's not going to. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think that Nintendo is actually gonna pursue it. Like, the litigation aspect of Nintendo, really, I think, is overblown. They threaten a lot. They throw out a lot of cease and desist. But like, I can think of very, very few instances in which they actually took someone to court. And so I think it's just a case of they're
Gary Bowser.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of they're a company. They want to make sure that like their shit is as like litigious as possible. And you know what? Dollars to donuts. I bet it's because people tried to sue because they had the idea for the Wii. I wonder if this like whole patent thing for them is a case of like we don't want anyone trying any bullshit on us because just because you had the idea. I truly don't know whether it's like a cynical attempt to hold on to like hoard these things or if it's an attempt to cover their ass because everyone tries to sue them all the time. I don't know, but either way, like and I had a couple of friends who said like, yeah, I'm never gonna buy another Nintendo product after this. I'm like, you've pirated their games for the last 8 years. Like, stop trying to pretend that, like, now is the moment that you're taking your moral stance. You like piracy. It's okay. I have no problem with this. But, like, I truly, like, I had a friend who was like, yeah, man, Sword and Shield, that game was so bad, I haven't paid for a Nintendo game ever since. And I'm like, that wasn't them. You know that wasn't them, right? Like, you just like piracy. And I'm like, this is one of those things for me where I'm like, can we please stop pretending that piracy has any morality, has like any like anti-capitalist sentiment? You do it because you want things for free. That's okay. Yeah. I'm fine with it.
You want things for free, or you want to play your a console exclusive game on your computer, and you don't want to go through the fucking process of fucking dumping your goddamn games, and like, I get it. Or the fucking game has fucking de novo that's cracked that would let you play the game at a better performance on your fucking computer if you played a cracked version of it. Like, I get that. Like, to me, like, in my opinion, as a consumer, I'm entitled to the most optimal fucking experience imaginable. And you better, and if you're a business, you should try to make that experience something that it costs money.
Yeah.
Because, like, we'll pay for it if it costs money. But if you're going to go out of your way to make, like, if you're going to go out of your way, like, the Switch 2, for instance, or whatever, like, if the Switch 2, like, continues to have all the performance issues of the Switch 1. Like, it really doesn't solve the problem, which I have a feeling it will. Like, I don't feel like we're not going to see consistent 60 frames per second on the Switch 2.
The reason that I actually don't think so, because I think that the technology used for the Switch, like, which is used for, like, fucking, like, Android cell phones, like, no,
it's 2015 era hardware.
Yeah, like no, we totally can see. The thing is, I don't know if we're going to see consistent 60 on every game, because I think it's going to come down to developer know-how, and particularly like really good dev kits. I think that's going to be the deciding issue. But I think that Nintendo games, we are going to see a consistent 60, like at the very least first party games, with a better output. Whether or not, and for me personally, as someone who owns a PC, like, I don't mind if that's the case. Okay, every Nintendo game runs at 60 and it outputs at, you know, 1080, 2K. Like, great. That's good enough. And ideally, someone who doesn't care, like the people who are current Switch owners and who have no interest in a PS5 or an Xbox One or a PC because they don't care about performance, they're just happy to be there, like, that's probably going to be good enough for them. But for me, like, I'm fine with Nintendo games being the only thing that run well on these consoles, and then I'll just emulate everything else.
Yeah, like, or I mean, you don't have to even emulate anything else. Probably that stuff's coming out on Steam anyways.
Exactly, yeah. And so, for me, I think it's probably going to be good enough for me and for the average person. But, like, yeah, if someone's like, yeah, I don't think this is a substantial enough upgrade, I'm not gonna buy it, I don't need it, it's fine by me. Like, I have no problem with that. My issue generally comes down to anyone who wants to turn their lack of interest in a product or lack of interest in spending something, like, just not having that degree of commitment to, like, oh, I need this today, into, like, them on the copium that they're doing something great and important.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, dude. Like,
I felt this way. I had an encounter with someone who said, like, oh, I'm not going to buy Shin Megami Tensei 5 because the PS4 version's only in Japan and they didn't release it in America. And they were mistaking it for Disgaea 6. And I was like, that didn't happen. There's a Switch.
I was going to say, there's a PS4 version.
There's not a PS4 version. And it's not released in Japan. It's just a Switch game. And they're like, oh, well, that's unfortunate because I already bought Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. So now I can't afford Shin Megami Tensei 5. And I was like, all of that, you could have been playing a better game. You could have been playing a better game.
That's fucked. Dude, I can't believe that's a huge twist in that story, bro.
Yeah, like, the fact that they, like, specifically their idea was, like, yeah, the reason I bought Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl is because I was supporting the good guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really supporting the fucking, the good ones right there. God.
It's like, yikes, bro. Like, it's, what is that? Why does everything have to matter? You know?
That's the thing is, it's just, it's... Is it social media? Has social media made everyone think that what they have to say matters?
I truly don't know.
Because what they have to say could matter. What they have to say could be the big take that day. Could be trending on Twitter.
Julian was in this conversation, and to their credit, they were like, yeah, no, there's not a single game that is... Because I always say everyone's got a price. And he's like... No single game is my price. Like, he admits he has a price, but it's not as low as just like, oh, this company that I like released a game, or that I don't like anymore released a game, but I really want to play it, therefore I will buy the game. Like, I think that's perfectly respectable. Like, to just admit, like, oh yeah, I could totally be bought off, but it's probably not as low as this man right here, like, as this guy, which is fine. I've accepted that I have a low price, and I'm not going to pretend I don't. But... the person in this conversation who was like, yeah, I'm not going to support Nintendo because they patented their thing. They don't even own a Switch. And I'm like, yeah, it's really easy not to support them when it doesn't affect
like,
you.
You're not doing it. Like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, to me, just spend your money on games you actually want to buy and play. And just don't spend your money... And don't spend your fucking time on the shit that looks like ass or is disrespectful of you and your time and your money. Like, a myriad of, like, many games released in the modern era, to be quite frank. Like, I've been laughing my ass off because I've been playing Baldur's Gate 3 and I've been having the fucking time of my life. I've been having so much fucking fun. And we were talking a bit about it yesterday, too, Miles. And the game is so good. That the big controversy with this game is that it's good. Like, that's the controversy.
I've heard this, ironically
the game
enough.
Is that it's fucking good. Because you have, like, developers from big AAA studios, like, fucking Obsidian.
This happened with Xbox. This happened with Tears of the Kingdom and Elden Ring. Where, like, when a game comes out in such a good state, there are people who just, like, are just malding over the fact that they can't ship that product.
Yeah, like, what the... And everyone's like, yeah, and everyone was like, yeah, Larian made this in an atypical development environment. It's like, oh, okay, the development team of 400 people spent 6 years on the game. Okay, because I'm sorry, like, you know, Naughty Dog's got like a fucking 1,000 people working there, and their games take 6-7 years now. You know, most studio games now, unfortunately, Miles, take like 5, 6, 7 goddamn years, and they're dealing with hundreds of more people typically.
Like, the inverse of this, especially because, like, I, you know, I'm Team Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, and all that, but, like, I have been fucking annoyed at seeing people be like, well, the reason the game is so good is that it took 6 years. Like, they made it for 6 years. And so people now think, like, that's the solution. Josh, just take your time with the game. And it's like, I truly don't know. I really, truly don't know.
Nukem Forever is fucking awesome because it was in development for 11 years.
Yeah, I don't know if Tears of the Kingdom is what it is today, but could have been developed in a shorter period of time. We don't know that. None of us can know that. And even then, like, I only just learned, because I stomp around the modding scene, I only just learned that the physics engine is different. It's a different engine, this game. And, like, I had noticed the physics had been improved. I thought it was just straight up a fine tune or a tweak.
It's a different game engine,
yeah,
Sam.
Yeah, it's a complete overhaul, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I didn't know this. And so, like, you're like, well, why did they reuse the map? Apparently that's why, like...
Yeah, I find Tears of the Kingdom and, like, Baldur's Gate 3 both extremely interesting games as to, like, why they're good, like, what makes them so great
and especially,
and so
like,
excellent.
Where that time went, because I think that Baldur's Gate 3 taking 6 years was unlike Last of Us 2, where Last of Us 2 took 6 years because the dev pipeline and the dev, like, team was so chaotic and so bad, and Hallie Gross and Neil Druckmann kept doing rewrites, shit kept getting thrown in the trash. Like, whereas, like, I think Baldur's Gate 3 and Tears of the Kingdom, it was just a case of, like, we just gotta take our time and tinker, and we have and all these delicate systems. And, like, even then, Baldur's Gate 3 and Tears of the Kingdom came out with so many glitches.
Definitely. In Baldur's Gate 3, also 2, came out in early access 3 years ago. So half of its development time also had a ton of community feedback and stuff as well, which of course definitely aids to its current quality today. But what I find interesting is that, like, both games aren't like entirely like wholly revolutionary products for like their genre. But with Tears of the Kingdom, it's like the Ultra Hand in the fusing, in the mechanical elements in the open world that make Tears of the Kingdom stand out as a really like special entry in its genre. Where with like Baldur's Gate 3, the gameplay is really excellent and creative and choice driven, of course, you know, par for the course for a good CRPG game.
Yeah, and especially from Larian, like,
exactly. But what really like brings this game to that next level in that Tears of the Kingdom way is actually its presentational, its like narrative in gameplay presentation level, and how like beautiful it looks, and how like when characters like speak with you, they move their arms and bodies in very believable ways and motions when expressing stuff to the player, and it makes the creative choices that you're making feel like 100 times more real than they already do in fucking Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 when the games looked like fucking 25 years old, like, you know.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I've only seen screenshots of Baldur's Gate 3. I have not seen a lot of footage of it. Because the footage is dangerous, because you watch one thing, and especially if it's embedded on YouTube, next thing in your recommended is Final Boss. Like, that, which sucks, because I would love to see the game in action.
I gotta be honest with you, Miles. I'll have to stop you right there. I've done nothing but watch Baldur's Gate 3 in Beatles content this past week on YouTube, and I have not gotten recommended a single spoiler thing for Baldur's Gate 3.
And that might just be a case of a good community, because I specifically remember the Tears of the Kingdom community, even though the game leaked super duper early. No one spoiled anything, which I was very surprised by. And so I think that might just have... that it just might be a case of, like, good guy community. Because I remember Kingdom Hearts 3 was something very similar happened.
My theory is game is dummy long. Like, it's like, well, it's not that it's that long. It's just that it's a game where taking your time is worth it. And I feel like...
But the thing about these uploaders is they don't... The whole point is they don't take their time.
They don't. Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. And also, like, this game has existed in early access, so people have been playing it for, like, you look up content about, like, Baldur's Gate 3, specifically when you find, like, a Reddit post or whatever, if you're looking for, like, build content or something like that, yeah, or trying to find a specific question, you'll find posts from, like, 250 days ago or whatever, and it's, like, final months of early
of
access.
EA, yeah.
It's a fucking great game, and it's such a shame to see fucking people and developers especially have such a loser attitude.
I genuinely mean I have enjoyed that, like, the race of games of the year thus far, because I always expect Discourse to be the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I specifically remember
every time like a new game comes out, and especially like a new hot game that is even vaguely comparable to another game, I just expect it to be like this like nightmare world of everyone saying, well, this game deserves, you know, this more. Why isn't it more popular like this? You know, all these things. And I've appreciated that like the two highest rated games of the year. And this goes back to my Metacritic geekery, because Baldur's Gate 3 has a higher Metacritic score than Tears of the Kingdom, but with like 1/10 of the reviews.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes back to like what's interesting about the Metacritic thing. But here's the thing, I'm sure if you go on OpenSea, it's probably still like within the same range, like of scores.
On OpenCritic, it's gonna fall, I think, a few points, because OpenCritic will slot in the PS5 scores. And I feel like the PS5 scores are going to be probably like...
They're going to be slightly lower.
They're going to be... I think it'll be low 90s to like, at worst, high 80s.
See high 80s. Like, I unless it's like a really bad way to play the game. Like, unless it's like truly a terrible way to play.
I don't think controller is horrible from what I heard. I'm playing with a keyboard because it's got a lot of fucking options. Like, I saw playing with the controller. Looked like... It would be a lot, but apparently, like, I've heard from a review I watched, he said he's like, because he has a primarily, like, a Mr. Matty Plays has a primarily, like, console-based audience, so he reviewed or gave his impressions entirely on controller, talking about that, and he said it was fine. It's just, there's a lot of mechanics.
It's lesser, yeah, I'm sure.
It's what you gotta deal with, man! You know, there's only so many fucking buttons on, you know, one of these things.
And I appreciate that they made any effort there. Like, it was interesting reading Kojima talk about, like, figuring out the keyboard and mouse controls, where he's like, I am not good with keyboard and mouse, so I just left that up to my team.
So I did it.
Yeah, so I didn't do it. And
I play on a controller.
Yeah, he said, I love that. I play on a controller. That's the end of the sentence.
I mean, give him credit. I really do actually mad respect to the Kojima Productions team for actually making Death Stranding actually be a game that functions properly at
and
all
doing it
in house. Keyboard.
Yeah, and doing the whole thing in house. Like, they didn't outsource it.
Exactly. But specifically, what I mean is actually making a game where analog movement and analog actions, both on the triggers and on the both sticks, are so important to playing Death Stranding, and they actually made it work on
that
keys.
Is so that is genuinely surprising to me, because I thought that the game would just be worse.
You just think it would open like a Yakuza game, and it'd be like real delivery men use a controller,
real porters use a controller. No, they're fine with using the keyboard and mouse, and they got no issue with it. And I'm like, all right, damn, okay, like, nice job. Yeah, but like, it has been so interesting, like, seeing, like, these two games not really be pitted against each other by anyone other than people on Twitter who want to put them in the same category of games that suck and are bad examples of good games. Like, and it's, like, so amusing, like, whenever people are talking about, like, yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 and Tears of the Kingdom, like, they're not true representations of, like, of games that we can make. You know, that they're under special circumstances, which, to be fair, is true, but also, like, shut up. Like,
it's true, but it's fucked that's true. Like,
the fact that this is not the development environment that everyone gets, it's probably the real issue. You shouldn't just be jealous that a company exists that fosters that environment.
Yeah, you know why? Is because fucking Larian is a fucking independently owned fucking studio, and the fucking CEO, Sven, last name forgotten, I'm sorry.
My friend told me this as well, but I forgot,
like,
the name. It starts with like an L.
He's someone who fucking cares about the quality of the game in making a good role-playing game in Baldur's Gate 3 specifically. Like he cares about choice and consequence in making a good, high-quality CRPG with Divinity and Divinity 2 and Baldur's Gate 3. And, like, that's why the game has so much effort in every orifice. Where, like, nowadays, most fucking companies would be like, oh, only 10% of the players are going to see this content, then it's not worth doing. Like, because, you know, because we were talking a bit about, like, Final Fantasy 16 sales and how, while they might have looked good maybe initially, like a week after, like a couple weeks after Square Enix, when the kind of dust has finally settled, Square Enix was like, yeah, not really up to our expectations, IMO. And it's like, shit, man. That game sold like 4 million copies in like 2 weeks on one system that only like 40 million people have.
Yeah, I think it's just a case of Square Enix always has really unrealistic expectations for their games.
It's been like that for 10 years now.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, like, I have a feeling you're going to say this about 7 Remake as well. Unless Sony gets their act together and they just are able to bust ass and sell a bunch of PS5s. But, like, it's a shame. It really is a shame that great games can come out and they're always in some way compromised. And, like, with... whether I like or dislike a game is always kind of irrelevant. I want that game to be good. I want that game to be the best possible version of the game that it can be. And what I hate is, like, fucking losers. I hate losers who want games to, like, be worse for this, or for a game to fail or suck for the sake of... And I'm saying this as the man who wants Elemental to be the worst thing ever, for the sake of, like, their fandom getting the W. Like, I remember seeing this with Redfall and Tears of the Kingdom, where they were like, well, Tears of the Kingdom's not a real M-Sim, and Redfall, how's that ever gonna fail? You know, Arcane, man. They always know what's up. Like, Tears of the Kingdom's really gonna be so much better. Wine, yeah, like, you know? Redfall's gonna be so much better than Tears of the Kingdom. And it's just like, first of all, who cares? Who gives a shit? Right, like, if you're not going to play Tears of the Kingdom, don't worry about it. I'm sure Redfall is going to be your favorite game of the year, and it's fine, and never mind. But, like, the other thing is just the fact that people always want games to take an L so that their game can be better. And I always cite this, like, God of War writer,
It's all console war fuckers.
Like, but it's not even console war fuckers. It's console war fuckers who are now in the company themselves. It's insane. It's actually nuts that you'll have developers, like, on Twitter be, like you'll have that person who, like, wrote for God of War Ragnarok or just regular original God of War who, like, is shitting on Elden Ring. Like, that's insane to me. That you can't even just be professional.
Yeah, because it doesn't have, like, a traditional narrative. It's like, no, I'm sorry, it doesn't constantly interrupt the game for 8 hours with some fucking cutscenes.
Their problem was, and again, I've always said, like, their issue is one of the same ones that I have. They have a problem with the difficulty scaling. Like, the fact that it's like you're always underleveled or overleveled, and you're never really at an even pace with the game. But they, like, had to say it in this way that's, like, so, like... It's not even, like, constructive. It's just them just going at the game kind of in the hopes that, like, I don't even know who they're expecting to
they're,
be,
they're
like...
They're, like, light-larking, dude.
It's
never like, you know, in a game like God of War, where it's a more linear narrative, you know,
we can pace out the, you know, the balancing.
Yeah, like, we can pace out the battles so they're all fucking piss-easy, like...
Yeah, I always get really annoyed. I truly get annoyed whenever I see people who are like, man, you know... The thing about, like, a linear game that's so much better, it's like, shut up! Like, I'm sorry, we don't play non-linear games for the benefits that linear games have. That's not how it works, you know? So if someone was like... Like, people are like this with RPGs as well, where it's like, well, you know, the thing about an RPG is they're so hard to balance, whereas if you just make a stylish action game, it's like, all right, dude, like, whatever, whatever, man. I just can't stand the light-larking of these people who are like, why aren't they making the thing that I asked for? Ironically enough, that does go back to our conversation with, like, SpongeBob and, like, cartoons, or, like, most cartoons nowadays are made for children. Whereas all the people who are writing kids' cartoons who are like, yeah, I think animation's art, man. I think animation's such art. And, like, I think animation's art. I'm also just aware that America did not foster a real, like, love or taste for animation that's mainstream. Hell, anime is not as mainstream as people might think it is in Japan. Like, it's not like everyone in the country watches anime.
No, yeah.
It is technically a niche thing. And especially, like, the level of, like, otaku, like, midnight anime, that's super niche. People who think, like, oh, all anime's for perverts, like, there's all these animes that have all this, like, content. It's like, no, those are super niche. Those are, like, really not that popular there.
Yeah.
there's only like a couple of like cultural touchstone animes like Doraemon or, you know, that like just like old men can
When anime gets imported to us in the States, even in the modern era, we really are not given much context for how a show releases.
Yeah.
And unless it's something that is big, unless the anime is being hyped up because it's based off a popular manga, like Chainsaw Man or like the new Jujutsu Kaisen season or Attack on Titan or whatever. Or
all MAPPA, by the way.
Yeah, or something like that ends up picking up a lot of steam during its run, like Bocchi the Rock or something, which is based off a manga, but not as popular as the other three.
No, not nearly as popular.
But it's one of those where it's like after the show aired, like a couple episodes, it got spread around online, and now I'm surrounded by those lovely girls all the time.
Yeah, and like I should watch Bocchi the Rock. I'm not going to because I'm immensely lazy for some reason.
I'm going I have my new OLED TV out in my living room, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and you know what? I hear it's excellent. I have no doubt that I would like it if I did watch it. Just for some reason, I just haven't been up to watching things. I've been watching Seinfeld, which is great, by the way.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's awesome, dude.
No, dude, I'm happy to be watching Seinfeld, but, like, I'm not at a point where I want to intake new stuff. I'm just waiting for that, for those couple more mods for Tears of the Kingdom that I want to see, and then I'm doing my fucking no paraglider ultra difficult run, like...
Oh, yeah, you were telling me about fucking no fucking paraglider. That sounds like such a pain in the goddamn fucking ass.
I'll let you know if it's fun. I'll actually let you know if it's fun or if it's miserable, because I actually think it could be really fun. Because what you were saying about just having so many tools in the game kind of getting too easy, like, I actually wonder if, like, no paraglider would kind of be a big alleviation of that, especially because you could do it in the mainline game. Like, it's now an option to play the entire game without the paraglider. You just have to not do one certain quest and that's it. So I'll let you know if it's a giant pain or not, but it's doable. People have done it. They haven't been able to 100% the game, but they have done it. I'm just waiting for those extra couple mods so I can do that. And then at night, I watch some Seinfeld and I just rewatch those episodes. And it's so nice to just not have to worry about being in the right space to enjoy a new thing. But like when I'm ready, I'm going to crack down on Baldur's Gate for sure. And I'm going to, there's a lot of anime I've been meaning to watch, like not even just recent stuff, but like a lot of classics. I need to watch Slayers. Yeah. I've been meaning to watch Slayers forever. And
tomorrow, there's some more manga I want to read. I want to read too. There's lots of stuff I want to do. I've been on my fucking phone too much, dude. Can I be honest with you for a second? I've been on my fucking phone like way too goddamn much. I need to just like wake up and just like leave my phone in my fucking bedroom.
Well, the problem is you're looking for a job, right? Like that brings out the phone-aholic in you, where you gotta
brings out the phone in you
because you gotta be near the phone at all times in case you get a call back. Like,
I know it sucks.
It's so awful, dude. Well, we were talking about the worst feeling in the world is like applying to a job that like isn't in your field and you're pretty sure is like below you, and then you don't get the job. I genuinely drafted an email. I didn't send it. You know how people always say write a letter and then don't send it? I actually did send... I'm sorry. I'm so tired. I keep saying the wrong thing. I drafted an email to a company that... They were like a gamer content creation, you know, company. And so I wanted to be an editor. And they did their usual, like, letter. It's the same letter that Riot sends out, because I've applied to Riot as well and didn't get in. But I applied to Riot just because, like, it was on the job board. And I'm like, there's no way. And of course there was no way. So that one I didn't mind, but this one I was like, I totally should have got this job. So I just drafted out an email that says, as a gamer, you will understand the following sentence. I called them the F word and I said, and I slept with your mother last night. And then I didn't send it. And I was just like, that was just like me and all my gamer rage, just being like, I wish I could send this and just get away with it. But I didn't. But I threw out the gamer words and the gamer insults, and it felt great to just say, to just put it down.
Just get it down on paper.
Yeah, and I took the screenshot, I sent it to a couple friends, and that felt great.
But yeah, like not getting hired back for the Taco Bell position. That's as you said.
Taco Bell material.
Yeah. Not Taco Bell material was the. Because I laughed so much when you said that. Like, that is the worst feeling in the fucking world. Especially being by your phone thinking, I'm going to get this Taco Bell job. And then you don't get the Taco Bell job. And so, like, when you're searching for a job, you are, like, your phone is attached to your hip. And it fucking sucks. Because I missed the era when I could literally, like, put my phone away. And I knew I had no important calls. I wasn't going to get any texts. If I missed a text, I didn't care. It didn't matter.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's like a lot of the times it's like, because I really thought to myself, it's like, is there really anything that I couldn't get back to 2 hours later? Like, what is so breaking news potentially that could happen that I would, like, it was like, oh, thank God I was right next to my phone right then and there when I saw this message, because I don't know what I would have done if I saw it at 5:30 when I got up from my chair an hour later or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's like, and unfortunately, the one answer to that that is consistent is a job.
Yeah, someone calling for job or whatever, which is unfortunate.
But. Yeah, and so, like, right now, like, you are kind of stuck with your phone, and the problem is when the phone's right there, you don't want to put the phone down and do something else. And this,
yeah, you just, you it's fucking habitual. You just fucking go on, like, Instagram, you go on fucking, you just click Instagram, you click Reddit, you click fucking YouTube or whatever. You start just fucking scrolling, you see fucking one thing, it's like.
Well, it's like when someone's like, yeah, you know, I gotta, you know, oh, I have an appointment at 4 and it's 1 o'clock and you just don't want to get involved in anything in case it's too good. Dude, we need to be colored people.
we need to start engaging in colored people time.
Wow. Yeah, we need to start putting ourselves on colored people time. We need to turn our watches backwards an hour and a half. That video I have, like, at the concert, at the rap concert, where it's just, like, people just walking in the middle of the show.
It's pretty, it's pretty incredible. It's pretty.
It's like Noah's Ark, just, like, all of them 2x2 getting on the boat, like, but, like, 20 minutes late. It's like the flood has already started.
The collapse of concert etiquette, I find very fascinating. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't go to concerts really. I don't really like them. I don't care about them. But I find the decline of etiquette extremely fascinating. Like COVID fucked people up so much. They don't know how to fucking act anymore at these kinds of events. And I feel like that is part of the reason why that video of just the stadium filling in is fucking whoever the fuck, Jay-Z or whoever, is going off, you know?
Yeah. It's just, that video is so funny. And, like, I have to be honest, I hate everything about concerts. Like, I'm not a music person, and whenever people try and get me into music, I'm kind of always like, what do you get out of this? What do you get out of any of this? Because, first of all, it's just wiggling air. And second of all,
continue.
And second of all, because I thought you were going to say something, sorry.
No, I know. I just said that was funny as fuck. I've never heard it described like that.
I can't take credit for that, but second of all, it's just a case of, like, because I love, like, a great composition. I love, like, a truly beautiful work of art. But then, like, people will always be like, yeah, man, have you ever gotten into the band Toilet? And like, they'll try and get you, they'll try and put you up on Toilet. And like, they'll tell you, like, yeah, man, their third album's just not as good, but, like, you gotta listen to the second album. But the thing is, the first album's just not very good, but it's really important to understand the second album. And I'm like, and this is no different than TV. It's no different from games. And yet, for some reason, listening to music, like, truly having to listen to music where I'm not that interested in it, is cancer. Like, it is one of the most painful things in the world for me to
have to. I low-key kind of understand what you're talking about with, like, you're just like, that's why I very rarely listen to full albums. Because it's like, a lot of times, it's like, if I listen to one song I really like, I just want to listen to that song 50 times. Like, in a row. I just want it looped over and over and over again. I can't get enough of it. And then it's in my repertoire of songs I like. You know, it's on my repeat playlist on Spotify. My repeats, so Spotify has a, like, a top 30 of your most played songs, it constantly keeps updated. And it's been basically the same 25 of 30 tracks for like 6 months at this point.
I actually stopped. I stopped using Spotify because I don't listen to anything on there anymore. Like I keep wanting to listen to like garbage, like not the band Garbage, though, Not Your Kind of People is a great classic MGS vibes. But like, I want to listen to like just shit on YouTube now. You know, I'm not like, I don't know, like, Spotify.
Yeah, you want to listen to drum and liquid drum and bass mix 02.
Yeah, exactly.
N64 PS1.
Just shit like that. That's complete like nonsense. Or like if there's like a J-pop song where I only know the Japanese title of it, or like I only know the English title, but the song is in Japanese on Spotify. I'm like, well, I can't find it. Yeah. All right. Well, we're done. We're done here. I have no choice. That was how it was with the Final Fantasy VII Remake soundtrack on Spotify. It was all in Japanese. And I was like, you can't be serious right now.
Yeah, Monster Hunter 4, I think it was like that too. Where World is like that. It's all in Japanese. It's
I'm like
no.
You can't be serious. I wanna listen to I don't even know the name of the song, but I wanna hear it. Like
I just wanna hear fucking the Rathalos theme, okay? Like
yeah, it's just so I don't go on Spotify anymore. And I think that's a big problem with like the music scene and just like music stuff in general is like it's sort of just other than the radio, which I don't listen to really because I don't drive around much. Like it's just not possible for me to discover things And so when people tell me like, oh, man, you haven't listened to this album yet, I'm like, I didn't even know that album came out, man. I don't even know what artists are big right now. Like someone will always be like, you've never heard of like Lucha Doro. I'm like, what? Who is this? They're like, yeah, he's the biggest rapper in the Latin American music
scene.
Yeah,
that's what. So it was like Jack Harlow, and I was like, who the fuck is that? Like, I don't know who the fuck that is. Like,
he's got that one song, you know, like Slap Your Ho. Like, and I'm just like, I don't know this shit. I don't know any of these songs.
Like, that's why, like, earlier, Miles, I mentioned, like, I've been watching videos on the Beatles, and it's genuinely because I've been trying to figure out, like, what was it? Why the fuck do people like you so much? And it's not like I don't get it. Like, what's so fucking good about the fucking beat? You know, what's so good about Mario? You know, yeah. What's so good about it? Like, no, it's what's so good about it. I want to know what led.
Because you can listen to the Beatles.
People to feel this way about these fuckers.
Like, because it's like, I've listened to a lot of Beatles music. It just doesn't do the same thing for me that it does a lot of people. And, like, for me, I've just accepted I will never connect with the music in the way that it does for other people. But, like, clearly there was something in the water, like, in that era.
And that's the thing is, it's like, I want to know what's in the water. It's one of these things where it's like, I don't even necessarily want to, like, I don't want to connect with it. I want to know what's in the fucking water.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't know. I guess I've just been between, like, I feel like if we had to give this episode a theme, which we never do on Crack House because it's fucking impossible, but I feel like the theme
except
of this
the
episode,
Survivor episode, the reality yeah, TV episode.
I feel like the theme of this episode is greatness. I feel like I've been interested in, like, truly, like, great pieces of art and media recently, and specifically, like, what makes them so great and so popular and so well-beloved and well-respected, like, decades on, or years on. Like, and when you really dive into shit that's really good, like, of a really high level or something you really connect with, and then you try to go back to, like, mid, like, just, you know, whatever. And I'm not even mean mid. I just mean, like, you know, topic du jour,
personally
show
does
of the week.
Not, like, get, like, because I think there is a difference between, like, going back to mid, and in particular, like, going to something that you just do not feel, right?
Yeah, like, I got a good buddy of mine, like, younger brother. I'm really fascinated with his, like, TV moving watching habits, because he's all about, like, the new shit, like, what's out, like, what's, like, the big show, like, right now that I can fucking knock out and have, like, an opinion on? And I find that really interesting because it's like, man, you know, you could watch You spend all this time watching this, so you can watch like The Wire or something. Like, you know, you can watch something really good that stood the test of time and you could probably get a lot out of it. But like, because that's where I'm at now, is at this point, it's like, let other fucker, like, let, when it comes to TV and movies and music and shit, like, let other people do it and experience the shit and figure it out. And I'll circle back around if it's something I'm interested in.
Yeah, there is something really appealing about being, like, the guy who's, like, up on things. And I've just accepted that my taste is just not there. Like, my taste is so, like, weird and specific. Like, I think the one moment where I felt like I was up on something when everyone else was Death Stranding. Like, that was the one instance where I could be like, no, guys, it is good. You should check it out. But even then, that was a highly publicized video game. And the only reason that more people didn't play it was bad initial word of mouth. Like, yeah. That game was always, well, not always, but that game was probably going to find at least some success and some people who liked it at the level of quality that it was. That was never like a case of like, guys, without me, this game would have died. This game would have failed. And I think that's what a lot of people really like. They like to, like, find the thing that, like, no one else is watching and to be able to, like, get it passed around and to be a part of its success. And I just...
Which I get. Yeah. Which, by the way, especially as, like, a creator who talks about media primarily, I totally understand wanting to be the catalyst for something... That's good. And I don't even necessarily think it comes from malice or selfish.
No,
like,
I think it's
just
people,
be the guy.
People like to know that they helped great art. Like, I don't think that it's a pretentious thing to do. But I just have accepted that I can't do that. I don't know how.
No, I understand. Because I got to be honest, like, I've given up just being up and up on video games. Video games is way too fucking much to be up and up on, because so many big games release every fucking week now in a year. Like, typically it's like one, like two to three pretty sizable releases most weeks. Plus you have indies and other smaller titles that might just appear in a year, you know, that you're not really expecting or thinking about in January of the start of the year. And when you combine all those together, like, you really can't play like everything in a year, and at that point I'd much rather just spend my time playing stuff that, like, I'm like genuinely really interested in playing and not really worry about the current conversation or whatever the game du jour is.
Yeah, like, with I remember having this feeling with, like, 2021. I did not play a single Game of the Year nomination, and like, first, and that did not bother me. Well, no, I played Metroid Dread. I forgot that game was even nominated. And I had no problem with that. Like, I just didn't pay as much attention at the Game of the Year awards, and I didn't have that sinking feeling of hoping that my thing won that year, right? Like, I it was so funny, like, watching people get angry, like Elden Ring fans get angry that God of War kept sweeping up, like, the technical awards, like, because that was one of those moments where, and I feel this way with Baldur's Gate 3. Like, I genuinely worry that Baldur's Gate 3 won't have a chance at Game of the Year just because of, like, what I call the real time bias.
Yeah,
which is so, like, this is the most insane thing, because I was talking to a friend of mine and I was like, if you had to guess what game won the DICE Award in 1997, what game do you think it would be?
Like, Command & Conquer?
No, okay, so like for example, one game that came out in 1997 was Final Fantasy VII. And okay, you would think, like, okay, yeah, Final Fantasy VII, legendary game, of course. And the answer makes perfect sense, by the way. Like, this isn't, like, a thing that I'm, like, angry about. It was GoldenEye.
Oh,
GoldenEye,
yeah.
That makes perfect sense. Did a lot, by the way, for console shooters. It was a high-quality game. Really fun, really great, right? But, like, you would think, like, okay, but that game has not endured to the same degree that FF7. Like, where that is a cultural institution. And I just think it's a case of, like, yeah, no RPG is, like, ever won Game of the Year. It just never happened. And, like, Baldur's Gate 3 is of the level of quality that I totally think it should have a chance, and it probably should. Well, like, Tears of the Kingdom is great, but, like, Breath of the Wild already won. Let Baldur's Gate 3 win. Like, I don't know if it's gonna happen.
They won't do it because they're fucking cowards, because fucking gamers are fucking cowards, because there's fucking people who vote, and the goddamn Game Awards have fucking these cracked, horrible opinions because they,
about
they're like
biases about like real time games in particular, like Tears of the Kingdom is an incredible game, and ironically enough, the way that you were describing Baldur's Gate 3, I was like, this sounds a lot like what I like about like MGS5 and Tears of the Kingdom, where it's like you don't just make your build and then execute on the build, like you have to like then do all this crazy like shit to like win the fight because you can't just like overwhelm them with numbers. And
yeah,
and like that was really appealing to me. But in that instance, the real-time game is going to win for no other reason than it's a real-time video
game.
It's
real-time. And the same reason that, like the third-person over-the-shoulder bias, too, like, compared to, like, first-person games or top-down or isometric or anything else. It's just like...
Yeah, like, an FPS game has a lesser chance of winning than a third-person game for some reason.
It's like, it's seen as lesser than, which is... the idiotic, to say the very least.
It's actually nuts. And, like, I'm not going to, like, cry... because Tears of the Kingdom might win Game of the Year. Oh, this game I like is gonna win Game of the Year. But, like, I do think it's sad. It's genuinely a fucking shame.
It is.
The idea that, like, the other, like, game, the game that's higher rated, the game that all of my friends really care about, and that I would probably like a lot, is probably not gonna go the distance because of crap. Because of bullshit.
Exactly, and it's like it's fucked, and like, and you brought up earlier the game of the year how you didn't play a single game of the year winner from 20 or game of the year nominator from 2021, and I remember being so fucking mad at the nominees that year because I was like, dude, 2021 is filled with great games, and none of them are nominated because the Guilty Gear Strive is a fighting game, and Forza Horizon 5 is a fucking racing game.
No, it's a car game, Sam.
It's a car game. It's a car game. And there was a couple other, like, I remember there were like two other
Rise. Well, I think Rise was nominated. Monster Hunter Rise.
Monster Hunter Rise. Yeah, Monster Hunter Rise, I think, was nominated, okay. I think.
I said SMT5, which never had a chance. Because there's no story in SMT5. So it's not gonna happen. Yeah, I mean, just all this like it's just all this bias, because I was saying, I was really going down the list, and I was like, Tears of the Kingdom is kind of the only game with a chance, because, and even then, I'm not sure, because it's a sequel, and sequels tend to have, like, a little bias against them as well, but, unless you're, like, Red Dead Redemption 2, where, like, there was no game of the year for Red Dead Redemption 1, like, that went to, I think, Skyrim in 2011, so,
yes,
RDR 2, which has not won, compared to 1, could win that year. But Tears of the Kingdom is a direct sequel to another Game of the Year winner. And so, like, even then, that's, like, a kind of a compromised vote. Like, there's that weird... the weird thing in your head that, like, stops you from saying, yeah, that's the one. But I was going down the list, I was like, FF16 is in PS5 jail. It's in PS5 jail, and people had a problem with some politics stuff in the game. So that's gonna be a problem. Resident Evil 4 Remake can't win because it's a remake, and remakes never win. What else did I say was I said Baldur's Gate 3, which unfortunately that's probably gonna get the RPG that's gonna win best RPG, Sam.
It's gonna be relegated to the best RPG category.
It's quarantine category, whereas FF16 is probably gonna get best action game. Or Resident Evil 4 Remake is probably gonna get best action game. I think that Baldur's Gate 3, luckily, will probably win a lot of the technical awards for the year, which is really, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But, like...
I can also see Dead Space 3, Dead Space Remake, excuse me, Dead Space 2023, making a play for Game of the Year. It just is tough because it's right next to RE4.
And people like that Dead Space remake, but RE4 remake was more impressive.
I think most people lean towards liking 4 remake more than Dead Space
Remake. Well,
because
4 remake adds more originality. Like Dead Space remake is basically just like a perfect retouching of the game. It's similar to like the Ocarina of Time 3D remake, like where...
I don't think that's necessarily true, because to me, like Dead Space 2008 is like a really excellent game that just happens to have some moments or elements of like that early Gen 7 bullshit, like shitty turret section and some other. And
did they remove the turret section? Because I thought it was a straight up like.
No, they replaced the turret section with you physically going out into space and having to like fuck with shit. It's really sick. It's really
okay,
awesome.
Okay, so there's like, more of there's a true remake aspect to it.
Yeah, where like I really do feel like, because to me, like the difference between like RE4 OG, like to me, Resident Evil 4, played it earlier this year. We talked about it a shit ton in the early episodes of the second season. And it's. Like, to me, that game was just fucking amazing, fantastic, phenomenal from, like, top to fucking bottom. Where, like, Dead Space is, like, a mostly phenomenal fucking game from top to bottom with, like, some sections of shit. And, like, that is replaced. And then they also did some other, they also made some other choices to just make the game, like, flow better. Like, for example, like, Isaac Clarke now has a, is now a voice protagonist, but only in cutscenes, and he's only speaks when spoken to, when it would make sense for him to respond to something.
Right.
So he doesn't really say shit during gameplay, and it's not like fucking Link in the Game Boy Advance Link to the Past where he yells every time you swing the sword.
Yeah. The least necessary change of all time.
Yeah. I know, so extra. But
there's another game that does that too, where they just like they added voice lines from another game.
God, but it's a but yeah, I could also see Dead Space making.
This is an odd year because it's a year of like really excellent games that all have some bullshit like to the vote, like Tears of the Kingdom being like not just a sequel, but like a sequel in the same map. Baldur's Gate 3 being a CRPG instead of whatever genre is acceptable nowadays. Resident Evil 3 remake and Dead Space, or 4 remake and Dead Space being remakes. FF16. See, because here's the thing, in a conventional year, FF16 would be the easy winner. It's a big sequel to a legacy franchise that's well produced with a focus on story, and it's a real time action game. But like, just the sales and the interest and like the legacy just aren't there for that game. In any other year, if FF16 came out at the level of like quality and storytelling and enthusiasm that FF14 has, it would be the easiest, most like clear, visible game of the year, games journalist win this year. And instead, like, it just kind of came out and people were like, it's good. And then they moved on. There was a couple other games that I pegged as probably going to be game of the year. Like Hi-Fi Rush, I think actually might even make a run for it as well.
You think that might get nominated? I saw that it crossed 3 million sales recently, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could.
It's been cooking. It's consistently been selling and cooking,
dude,
which I think
Hi-Fi
is great.
Hi-Fi Sweep, man.
Oh man, that'd be awesome.
No,
that should definitely win best soundtrack. I think
it will win best soundtrack because it's got a great score and it's got great
or best audio design or probably best audio design. I think more
excellent, incredible audio design in that game,
dude. If that game doesn't get nominated the same way that fucking Ape Out didn't get nominated for best audio design, dude, I aped out when Ape Out was not nominated for best audio design. That shit made me so mad.
Hi-Fi Rush has a AAA advantage though. I think it will happen, but. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, there's a couple of games where I think there will be, like, a clear run just due to enthusiasm and good scores. But, like, all of them have some, like, crap that's going to keep them from, like, being the obvious winner. Whereas, like, it was a two-horse race last year between Ragnarok and Elden Ring. And Ragnarok was even more interesting because it didn't win the first time. So it actually had the chance of being, like, the Godfather 2-esque, like, redemption round.
Oh, no, God of War won in 2018. It was a reverse situation where RDR2 won all the awards except for Game of the Year.
Oh, then God of War 2 had no chance. Never mind. But it was funny to get back to what I was saying, watching, like, Elden Ring, like, lose all the technical awards and, like, people on Twitter just being mad. They're like, "What? Well, this is bullshit. Like, why didn't it win this technical award?" It's like, why the fuck do you think it didn't win the technical awards? Like... And so I'm just thinking, like, if the same thing happens for Tears of the Kingdom, like, where people are like, why isn't it winning, like, technical awards? It's like, have you seen Baldur's Gate 3? Because I'm sorry, like, Elden Ring, the game looks very good, but...
Fucking God of War Ragnarok's a better-looking game than Elden Ring. It's not a
It's not like not a, it doesn't make Elden Ring a worse game. It just means in this award
the priorities were different.
Yeah, like, the game that looks nicer and performs better should win. Like that's just how it is. And I'm definitely like I don't know. This is going to be a really interesting year for Game of the Year because it's going to be a lot of games that like. I feel similar to 2017, where all of them have a chance, but then all of them also have some bullshit. Like, I thought Breath of the Wild was the obvious win in 2017, but you also had Nier Automata, which was this, like, profound, genius story that everyone loved. You had Mario Odyssey, which is higher rated than Breath of the Wild. There's just all these, like, really interesting, like, intricacies to Game of the Year races. And this year, it's, like, more of a shame, where, like, it's all these really interesting games, and, like, most of them don't have a chance because of crap!
Because of really trash, like, politics.
And priorities.
And what sucks, and what makes me so mad is, like, this is the problem that, the Oscars fucking have, too. Like, this isn't exclusive to fucking gaming award shows, but like gaming award shows should strive to be fucking better than Oscars and Grammys and the Emmys and all this shit, because gaming's fucking better than those mediums anyways, so like,
and more diverse awards, like what yeah. people like is more diverse,
yeah, and like I feel like the award should be accepting of that, and it should be open to like all genres, and I don't fucking care that Baldur's Gate 3 it would look maybe a little like dweeby to my brother at first glance, you know, like I could give two fucks.
Yeah. Like if he played Baldur's Gate 3, he might actually like it. Cause it's a good fucking product. Like it and it's so funny cause there are only certain products where people like, don't worry about the prestige of it. Like the one that baffles me the most is Persona 5. Cause Persona 5 is straight trash, Sam. Like that game is pure anime bullshit. It's teenagers yelling. It's like a boy dating his teacher. Like just all the like problematic, like all the crap, like over sexualization, all the stuff that people have problems with in anime is in Persona 5. And yet for some reason, gets the pass. It gets not only the pass, it gets the biggest pass of all time. There are RPGs with less sleaze that people give more, like, less of a chance to than Persona 5.
Dude, I'm just imagining it's fucking Trails of Cold Steel, when I hang out with all my female classmates, everyone says it's problematic, but when Persona 5 does it, nobody bats an eye.
Yeah, that's a flirting versus sexual harassment game, where like Persona 5, like the more I just like think about it, the more I'm like, how did this game get away with it? Like truly get away with it, especially because Persona 4, 3, and Catherine are being held to such scrutiny nowadays for like problematic elements. Persona 3 less so. I think it has like one element of like a trans character being like, "Hey, I'm actually a man, but if you want to hook up sometime, let me know." Like, just like,
what are the problematic elements of fucking Catherine outside of cheating on your girlfriend is wrong?
Everything to do with Erica. And especially the new Catherine in Full Body.
Oh, like the Full Body?
Yeah. Like, the original Catherine, the only problem anyone has with it is, like, the treatment of Erica. And, like, I've always kind of argued that the treatment of Erica in that game as, like, a trans character is
Isn't she well-liked by her friends in the bar?
Like, yeah, but, like, they also kind of, like, treat... They also don't really treat her as, like, a true woman. And, like, the thing is, like, all these people are terrible characters. Like, they're terrible people. I'm like, this is actually probably how they would be. I think it's just a nice... And here's the thing. She doesn't tolerate that from them. Like, anytime it happens, she like... You know, she does the anime-esque Manzai response where she claps back. And it's like, I feel like this is just the realistic depiction of, like, terrible people in a very complicated world dealing with, like, gender problems and relationships. I feel like it fits the tonality of the game enough that, at the very least, I don't think it's wholesale a problem. I think that there are elements of it that you could criticize, but, like, I don't know. It does feel like it's more of a commentary, and it's more of a thoughtful look at, like, how complicated, especially, like, gender roles and the changing of the role of man versus woman is in our modern society. if starring a bunch of shitty people than if everyone was just like super politically correct about it. Like, that's my personal take on it. And it could, and by the way, you could still dislike it. You could still think it's hurtful. You could still think it's not the right way to do it. But like, for me, I'm just kind of like, this is in the spirit of the game. This is in the tone of the game. So
yeah,
I think if nothing else, it's less than like ignorance and more probably just, I think that there was intent to it rather than like ignorance. And yeah, them just not knowing how to do a better job. That's my personal, that's my opinion. And it can be a problem. It could totally be a problem. But I think ignorance is worse. I think just completely fucking failing is worse. Cause that's what Persona 5 does, is it completely fucking fails at like, it's like one gay scene or it's one trans scene, whatever the problem is that people have with it. They tried to change it and they made it worse in Royal. It's just like really, it's so funny. Like, that company is so funny. And then, meanwhile, you have SMT5, which has no problems. And no one gives a shit because it looks more anime for some reason. And that is the ultimate, like, how did they get away with it game. Persona 5.
They can't keep getting away with it.
They can't keep getting... just a picture of Hashino. They can't keep getting away with it! Persona 6 comes out. I need to make that edit when Persona 6 comes out and it has whatever like bullshit that every other RPG has that people say is like a problem, but suddenly it's really cool because the UI is good in Persona 5. Like, it's so funny. That game gets a pass because the UI is good.
I know. It makes you so mad.
And I don't want to, like, I don't want to discredit the hard work of P5, and especially the game as an RPG. It's a great RPG.
Game's good. I got no problem with the game. I'm just
fascinated by the similar to you, similar to the Beatles. I'm fascinated by the fucking why. Why P5? Why?
And I think it is purely the fact that like it's different if you've never played RPGs.
I guess so. I guess if your only experience with RPGs is Pokemon, yeah, it is a little out there and different and cool and high budget for sure.
And also,
it
like
is
high,
for sure one of the highest budget turn-based RPGs out there.
But
for
also
sure,
in terms of like style, like it has the contemporary element to it that a lot of these other RPGs do have. But the ones that people are aware of, like, because there's a ton of contemporary RPGs nowadays, you know, as well as sci-fi RPGs. Fucking Parasite Eve from 1997, for fuck's sake.
It's
fucking games journalist.
Makes me
man.
So mad, dude. As a Legend of Heroes fan, it greatly upsets me. No one cares. Nobody cares about
it. It's fine when Persona does it. It's fine when Persona, but specifically Persona 5.
It makes me mad because I have heard on numerous occasions Trails of Cold Steel be referred to as a lesser Persona, and I want to go on a fucking
a spree killing
spree when I hear that fucking Jesus, when I hear that shit. Call it fucking lesser than my fucking goddamn ass, dude. It's like, there's no
breathe.
No reading comprehension, no gaming comprehension by anybody, dude. Like, it's damn it. Oh, boy. Miles, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, all right.
Let's bounce.
Join us on the Discord if you want to be a true crackhead.
Yeah, tell us what games you think will win.
Game or of the year or this specifically year. Which games you think are ineligible because of nonsense
to
and
win
why.
For stupid corporate for gamer politics.
Yeah, for Sonic Frontiers. Remember that shit from last year?
Oh yeah, how it lost to Genshin Impact in
because Genshin Impact bribed their fucking fans.
By giving them like enough for like one poll, like a one free poll, which will get you nothing of value at all in that game. Fucking Genshin sucks, dude.
I love
Genshin sucks.
Actually,
that
before
game
we go
sucks.
Before we go out, can I just talk about how Genshin is? We were talking about Persona. Genshin is the ultimate getting away with it game. That is the ultimate getting away with a game because it's everything that everyone hates. It's anime bullshit. It's gacha. And yet everyone I know who normally hates those kinds of things puts up, and I don't even say likes Genshin, puts up with Genshin.
Yeah, although I feel like at least in like my experience and just sort of seeing art of the characters and seeing it just proliferated online, I feel like I don't see a lot of Genshin shit anymore, or I see way less of it, I should say, than I did like last year, 2 years ago.
It depends on what porn circles you're stomping around in, I guess. Like,
oh, okay, yeah, I'm sure for you it's...
There's a lot of characters that are still very, very popular. I think the problem, and this might just be me, is that the problem is that all the femboys have moved on. Like, all the femboys move on, and then all of, like, the adult female characters have, like, fallen out. So it's just the lolicons now that are still, like, talking about Genshin Impact. But, like, yeah, like, you used to see, like, Amber all over the place, right? And she's
kind
of...
you'd see all of them. You'd see Amber and Ganyu and...
But like, where I'm hanging out, like, I'm still seeing people who are into, like, Eula. Eula's really popular. Amber's really popular. I don't know any of their names, though. I don't know a single fucking character's name in these fucking games. Like... Hu Tao, I guess, is really popular.
Yeah, Hu Tao is up there.
But I think it's just because there are certain people who just, like, latch onto a character forever. And, like, especially, like, depending on how young certain people are, they just, like, forever will be into Genshin Impact because, like, they started playing it at 18, 19.
Yeah. Like how you're forever into, like, Satania.
Yeah, exactly. Even though I was like, 21, like... I was too old to be into it. You saw
one 5 out of 10 seasonal anime,
yeah,
but
and I was like,
one
I was
this
like,
character
right,
just
baby.
Stuck with you.
Yeah, all right, baby.
I respect that.
And well, it's, because I feel this way about Zero Two, which is from an anime no one even likes. Like, I'm probably the most, like, ardent defender of Darling in the Franxx, and I think that anime is, like, true definition of mid. It is the truest definition of, like, a 4 or 5 out of 10 anime. Maybe 6 on a good day. Like, but I'm one of those people who's not a reactionary guy who says it sucks. I have a very, very refined opinion of why it sucks, except for when it doesn't. And I have spent a lot of time codifying the problems with that anime in a very articulate way, because it fascinates me. But, like, people are still all about Zero Two. She's just survived for some reason.
Yeah, well, she's a great character design.
She does, but, like, that doesn't, like, everyone in fucking Genshin has a great character design, too. And some of
them
don't
survive. Like, is why it got proliferated so much.
You know what? Persona 5 is also like this, because Persona 5, well, that and Atlas re-releases the game every year, so that new people can pretend that they have just discovered a new thing. A great new thing that hasn't been done before. Oh, this is the first RPG I've seen not set in a contemporary setting. You haven't played Earthbound! You haven't played Mother from 1990? Anyways, bye.